Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of The Vagabond Dilemma with my tenacious co-host, Rudy, and, well, me, Henry. Today's episode, we set forth on the adventure we left you off on last week, featuring more cows, more sea, and even some friends. Please enjoy the episode.
Henry, look at this. What's here?
A desk?
You're a fucking moron. Remember what we did last episode at the outro?
Oh my god, I'm back!
Fucking dumb.
I mean, what if we had an hour break and I was supposed to remember this shit without any reminder?
You were supposed to remember this.
Nah.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Vagabond Dilemma, whatever the name of the episode, part 2.
Yeah.
Because at this moment of recording, we don't have the episode name yet.
Well, I guess that makes it all the more exciting, doesn't it?
It does. Quick recap, though, of where we've been left off. So there was this boy, Sir John Franklin, right?
Johnny.
Went to look for Northwest Passage. Kind of a dickhead, to be honest. And then got lost while got frozen on ice. Oh no, oh no, oh no. But more on that after the intro.
Okay. What? Me?
It was so good. It was so good. And then this.
Who?
This is exactly, ladies and gentlemen, why we are stopping the podcast.
What?
It's unworkable in these conditions.
We are stopping the podcast? Hey, why wasn't I told?
Vagabond Dilemma is a podcast about explorers and vagabonds of sorts and good stories of people getting lost on their adventures, where we talk about a bit of a fact, a bit of history, a bit of faff, and then have a bit of a laugh on their expense.
If you wanted me to do the intro, you could just say so.
I will punch you.
It's like you're trying to orchestrate like a play, but you don't tell me anything until it's time, and then it's like, oh, why didn't you do exactly what I fucking scripted? No, it's not. No, it's not.
It is.
It's called having extraordinary expectations of your frankly dumbass co-host, and then being upset when it doesn't come true.
That's honestly, could not have said it better. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So what? You got a topic prepared? What's the deal with
fuck
hamburgers?
Your boy Johnny, well. And then I'm gonna take a different one. Listen, let me Google this shit real quick. ChatGPT, come and help. ChatGPT gives me Francis Crozier. That's what I'm gonna talk about. Fuck you.
Oh right. No chatting. No. Hey.
I thought you killed it, and then you now try to revive it. Okay, chatting.
I didn't kill it. You never started it.
Chatting. We are chatting about things we enjoy. A bit of a laugh, a bit of a fap.
That was a pretty funny chat, Rudy.
Yeah, indeed. What you been up to? Nothing? Okay, I've been up to reading books. Good.
Whoa.
Let's move on.
What kind of books?
A bit of gay romance.
That's so typical of you, Rudy.
It so is, and also quantum physics.
Wow, Rudy. You're really bringing out the stereotypes today, huh?
Real. It's even more stereotypical by the name of the book, because the first one was boyfriend material, and now it's husband material.
There you go. Actually, I do have one thing I could chat about.
Yes?
Do you want to know what it is? Do you want to know what it is,
yes.
Rudy? Would you like to know what it is?
Yes.
Are you interested in hearing?
Yes.
Can I? May I?
Yes.
I'm going to the GeoGuessr World Cup in October.
No.
Yes. As a viewer, no. Not as a player.
Good.
How dare you?
Wipe the floor with you.
Yeah, they would, yeah. That's why I'm going as a viewer.
Where is it happening?
It's in Stockholm. Sweden.
And is Anna going with you?
Yes.
Because she's also a fan of Geo thingy.
Yes. I would have gone alone if she didn't want to, but I invited her and I thought it would be cool if she came along, and she does want to go, so we are going.
Well, what a glorious thing to happen. How yes. cute. Okay, anyways.
I'm very excited because, sorry, I'm very excited. I'm actually very excited because here's the thing. Is that it hasn't happened before in person. So it's a very interesting format. It's a fun happening. I'm excited. I'm actually very excited. I don't know
I
if
mean, honestly,
I said
all
that.
Jokes aside, I am excited for you both because you really did do the geo-guessing on like a level that is more than enthusiastic, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. It's just a cool thing, you know, to tie in. Also, I wanted to go to Stockholm sometime anyway, so that's nice.
There you go.
Sorry, I just had...
That's a bit of a... What? It's probably around the time when autumn depression is going to kick in, so it's a good getaway.
Yeah, hell yeah.
Is it the end of August or October?
It's mid-October. So, okay. And then the day after I come back, I go back to Amsterdam to get my passport renewed.
Damn. It's all planned out.
Hell yeah, brother. Well, Rudy, now that we have chatted for the allotted amount of time, let's get into the, well, frankly, tea.
That tea. Right. Well, dear listeners, you are expecting us to do a part two. However, what you were not expecting us to do is probably do a part two in a way that is not really continuous of the story where we left it off last time. I have made no promises apart from making and giving you a resolution on a boy Johnny, which I will do. But I will tell you today a story that ties in the story you already know, but from a different perspective. And I was trying to make it as a joke, but yes, I did my research on Francis Crozier.
Francis Crozier?
Yes. An Irish lad.
Irish?
It sounded like Scottish, but...
I don't know how to do an Irish accent, to be honest.
Real, every time I try, it's like just Scottish. Because I do know how Scottish sounds, and it's like, this is not Irish. This is what it is.
This is something, but it ain't Irish.
Exactly. More like a Scottish background, like... Just your average drunk guy in a bar.
Alright, well, let's hear it.
Right then, Francis Rawdon Moira Crozier, born October 17th, 1796, in Banbridge, Ulster, which is a northern province in Ireland.
Northern Ireland, nowadays.
Yes. Is it?
Yes.
There you go. I did not know that. Anyways, he was, as you would expect a normal family at the age B, he was the 11th of 13 children, which is, whenever people say this, like, excuse me, in that day and age, imagine popping out.
Yeah, I mean, Francis was also the 9th of 12 children. I was also just like, what the fuck, dude? Holy shit. Relax with that family size.
Yeah. Even, like, I don't understand, because I remember... It used to be the case, let's say, in the medieval times. Like, I pop out as many as I can because half of them are going to die from, I don't know, like, the plague or some shit, right?
Yeah.
But in age of cusp of, like, 19th century, was that still the case?
It probably wasn't as bad as, like, the Middle Ages, but I think it still holds, yeah. I don't know. I don't know this factually, but that's what I feel like.
Well, he ran away from home at the ripe age of 13. No, he actually didn't run. He just
left.
Crozier volunteered for the Royal Navy.
Well, okay. I thought, yeah.
His run was in a metaphorical way of like, fuck y'all, I'm going.
Right. He like walked out the door amicably.
Exactly. As a 13-year-old could muster.
Right.
You know, like, just
and then he left a letter.
Puff out your chest and go out the door and your mom is like, what the fuck?
He left a letter.
There he goes.
He left a letter on his bed which said, fucketh thee all.
Thy all it would be probably. Oh,
my bad.
Well, and then I'm gonna talk a bit about some ships that he worked on, which there is quite some.
Alright.
The first ship he worked on was HMS Hamadryad. Specifically, this venture took place from June 1810 till 1812, after which he shifted to serve on HMS Britain. Henry? Dear. Ever so clever, ever so knowing, Henry.
Mm-hmm.
What does HMS stand for?
Hey, my ship.
That's actually a good joke. Hey, my ship, Britain.
I mean, her... Wait, Her Majesty ship, something like that.
Yes, exactly that.
Well, not too bad.
Majesty ship.
I didn't actually know that, by the way. But so I feel like that's mildly impressive.
I knew it was supposed to be something Majesty, but I had to look it up because I was like kind of curious.
I mean, Her Majesty ship kind of sucks as a title. I feel like.
Well, let me recheck, because now that I think of it, it does kind of suck when you say it like out loud. Let's see.
Her Majesty's ship, I guess?
Yeah.
Her Majesty's ship, Annabelle, let's say, for example.
Yeah, it is Her Majesty's ship. That's
I mean,
correct.
Sure. It's kind of weird, but it's fine.
Yeah, whatever. Well, anyways, while serving on Britain, he visited Pitcairn Island in 1814, where he met the last surviving members from HMS Bounty. Do you know this story of HMS Bounty, Henry?
I doth not.
Shall we take a little tangent from the story we're supposed to do today and quickly talk about something that has become a prominent inspiration for many stories?
Quite. It sounds lovely, sir.
I must say, I knew of this, I just didn't know that it tied into this story, and I feel like it's worth taking like 2 to 5 minutes to talk a bit about this.
Yeah, why not? Go ahead.
Right. So, Her Majesty's ship, Bounty, is a story about... It was also known as a HM Armed Vessel Bounty. And it was a merchant ship on which, in 1789, a dramatic event occurred that later served as inspiration for many books or other pop culture references.
Hmm.
Henry, here's a little minigame for you. Can you tell me what happened? My three prompts to you are... All men, BDSM, a Christian.
And what happened to the ship again?
You tell me.
Well, a Christian tried to convert whoever was on board. They were all like, we're having none of that. And we are all into BDSM, so let's fucking tie this dude up. And then in their lustful obsession, they forgot to steer and crashed.
Not quite.
Okay.
So listen to the story and see where you can pick up the prompts.
They tied him to the front of the boat, crashed on purpose to kill his ass, but then not realizing
they
would also sunk the ship.
That's how they invented those things that you put like in front of the ships, you know, like those ladies and whatnot, like those ornaments. I don't know how they're called, the ship hull thingies, you know?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
This is the start of it.
Well.
But so... On 1789, HMS Bounty was sent by the British to transport breadfruit from Tahiti to the West Indies. The biggest problem, however, its captain. William Bligh seemingly liked to rule with an iron fist, at least when it came to his crew. So naturally, a mutiny led by ship's first mate Fletcher Christian spoiled this voyage for the captain by the fact of being successful. The ship was taken and later burned down, and the mutineers settled on Pitcairn Island, and that's where later Francis Crozier, serving on Britain, met them.
Interesting.
So the BDSM was kind of, you know, the captain, I guess, was really into whipping people, and it was all men crew at the day, and Christian, well, there was a Fletcher Christian who led the thing.
I feel like that's, alright.
This is how we do... Factual prompts with misleading here.
Yeah. But when thinking of Christian, I'm not thinking of a dude named Christian, I'll tell you that.
Well, in my defense, I did say a Christian, but the Christian was with a capital letter, so, but you did not know that.
A capital C, Christian, sir.
Back to our boy Francis.
Francis.
He received his certificate as a mate in 1817. Just a good mate, you know, a good British lad.
Yeah, good buddy.
Yeah, honestly, it's just apparently you need a certificate for that.
When you're in the pub, you just get a certificate. Hey, you're a good mate.
What a chap, huh? Here, sign this. In 1818, he served on HMS Dotterel. During a trip to the Cape of Good Hope, which I think we have talked about in an episode of... Can't remember now what.
The Cape
but
of Good Hope?
We did mention Good Hope somewhere, I remember.
The Cape of Good Hope? Is that the... No, that's Cape Horn. Cape of Good Hope? Oh, I forget where this is. I'm pretty sure we have mentioned it, yeah.
Yeah, we must have. Well, anyways, that was just a trip to the Cape of Good Hope. Crozier also had joined William Parry's second Arctic expedition to traverse the Northwest Passage in 1821. At the time, he was a midshipman on HMS Fury. Later, in 1824, also with Parry, he returned to visit the North, this time on HMS Hecla. This is also the voyage which resulted in the sinking of Fury off the Somerset Island.
Well, shit.
Because both expeditions were with both ships, so there were two ships, the Fury and Hecla. And yeah, the second one, Fury, just, you know, croaked.
Somerset Island, is that still in the Northwest Passage?
Isn't that off of... It should be in North. Now, I don't know if it's in the Northwest Passage, but it should be a Northern Island.
Yeah, okay, that's good enough. Well,
and yeah.
So did they put the entire crew of that one ship on the other?
Honestly, don't know, didn't look it up, but they weren't, like, nobody reported many casualties, so I would suppose that most of them survived well off.
Guess whoever was the captain there really, at that point, could never ban partying, huh?
No, he could never. Because he actually was, as you were about to find out, in retrospect to our fucking Franklin boyo, was a quite decent dude. During his voyages, Crozier became a close friend and a confidant of the explorer James Clark Ross. He was also elected to become a fellow of the Royal Astronomical Society
that's the
in
title.
1827. After concluding valuable astronomical and magnetic studies on his three expeditions with Parry. So seemingly this dude was, first of all, a certified mate and now a certified fellow.
The big two.
The real chap of Britain right there.
Proper chap.
Yeah. In 1839, which is, we're getting close, Crozier again joined with James Clark Ross on the now known Ross Expedition, which was a four-year voyage to explore an Antarctic continent in the ships of HMS Erebus and HMS Terror, last of which Crozier was captaining for the first time ever. The voyage was considered highly successful, having discovered such places as, and listen, James Clark Ross joins in the expedition. I guess he was like the over-captain or whatever, but they have only two ships, one of which is captained by Francis Crozier. The things they discovered, right? Mm-hmm. Most prominent. Ross Sea, Ross Island, Mount Erebus, which is ship's name, and Ross Ice Shelf.
Jesus.
My guy just gave the other dude no fucking credit. It's just like, imagine what the hell?
At the fourth one, they find an ice shelf, and then it's like, holy shit, dude. I think this is time for my name. And it's like, nah, guy, it's Ross Ice Shelf now, bitch.
No, it's just this annoying, like, movie character of two friends. Or rather, not even two friends, just two people in the same situation. One of them looks at the spyglass, sees an ice shelf, goes to report it to the crew, and the other guy just like, oh my god, it's so crazy how I saw that first. Just being like a complete dick about it. It's crazy. Like,
damn,
there's
bro.
Always the one trope of that character.
I wish you had
does
seen
everything.
That first.
The other guy just sits at the side, and when people arrive to ask about it, yeah, I did all of that on my own. It's so crazy.
Yup.
But nonetheless, he was rewarded in some sense, because Francis, due to this success, Crozier was elected a Fellow of the Royal Society now in 1843 in recognition of his outstanding work on magnetism. Which is interesting to think that at the time, first of all, I mean, he was a captain. He knew a lot about the sea in itself, right?
Yeah.
But apart from that, he also just was doing physics whilst on these trips.
I mean, it
which
makes
I think
sense.
Is rather cool.
You need the navigational tools anyway, right? So I guess if you have like an interest in that, it kind of is works
true.
Out.
True. It's just, I can't just not say that it is rather outstanding for a man of humble beginnings in a 13-kid family to do all this.
Sire, you are free to say whatever you like.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I will be under the jurisdiction of my own narrative.
Lovely.
Right.
Simply lovely.
And so, without further ado, we tie our part two into the Franklin Expedition. In 1845, Crozier joined Captain Sir John Franklin as captain of the HMS Terror on the Franklin expedition to traverse the last unnavigated section of the Northwest Passage.
Yay.
I wonder how that turned out. Crozier was actually considered to lead this expedition. I wonder how that worked out.
Yeah, that's a good question.
However, his Irish ancestry and humble birth counted against him, which is fucked up. Knowing especially now, which I actually didn't know about before when I was doing research for this episode, that not only this sucks for him, but just that John himself seemed to be just a prick.
Yeah.
Which also just sucked, that like, it just goes to him.
Honestly.
And even the privilege of selecting subordinating officers, almost always given to the second in command, was given to somebody named, and I'm not making this up, James Fitzjames.
Yeah, he was also in running to be one of the captains.
Yeah, exactly. It's just Crozier who seems to me, like, okay, so that Johnny boy, he's, okay, he's valid to be as a contendant for the leading part, right?
Yeah.
However, looking at the let's put it, a resume of Crozier.
Sure.
My guy been to the north multiple times. Didn't do a fuck up like fucking John did, boy. But there's a thing, I guess they at the time didn't know that Johnny fucked up and basically almost didn't survive. This guy has an impeccable record, is actually a part of the Royal Society because not just of this like clout, because he had no clout, he was born in a humble family, purely because of his research and his expeditions. And even all that, and he still is like usurped basically by at least two other people.
Yeah. Well, I guess he shouldn't have been Irish.
But I must say, fucking James Fitzjames is a fucking funny name.
It is.
Yeah, well, what else is there left to say? The expedition set sail equipped with the most advanced sailing technology of the time. However, after a lot of difficulties and setbacks, both ships, HMS Terror and Erebus, got stuck in the Canadian Arctic ice. After this, none of them were ever seen again. At least so it was thought at the time.
Oh my god.
Oh my god. And by the way, if you want, the resolution, because I had to do basically about ish two people, I've done in a way that technically we could do a bit of improv. Then I give you one thing that happened, because there's an event chain that happened. And we can basically give prompts for ourselves for the improv a bit.
I like that.
I think we have time for that.
I like that a lot, actually.
So should we do that?
Yeah.
All right, then. First of all, no prompts. We are frozen in ice! We obviously have had up to 3 to 4 theories in the last episode, which the name of which I can't remember, something about Davy Jones and ghosts.
Yes.
But Henry, you had quite some time to think about this. An hour, actually. Have you cooked up any new theories of what might have happened?
So here's what I think that happened, right? So they were sailing.
Where's the catchphrase? I've been waiting.
Chill out, guy.
I can't. You hooked me the first time I heard it. And now
well, here's how I think the grass got mowed. So
most abhorrent shit. Go on, sir.
So Francis was in the running to be the captain, right? Yeah. The leader, the big one. Hey, it's not called Franklin's, or it's not called, what's it, Cozier's Lost Expedition? It's Franklin's Crozier. Lost Expedition. He doesn't even get credit for dying, you know? So he's kind of like mildly pissed. Like, he's like, okay, I'll come along still, because gosh, but I'm kind of pissed about it. And then as they sail along, he's starting to get like a bit of a better mind about it. He's like, all right, fine. But then he gets banned from being drunk. What?
Because of Disco Bay?
The incident at Disco Bay. So then he starts simmering, you know, he starts getting mad. Like, oh, no captaincy, no drinking. What is left, you know? So what he does one fateful night is they are floating along in the seas of the Canada, in the seas of the Canada, and he just sneaks into the engine room, and I don't know exactly how the engine is operated, but he turns it off. And however that is,
I think pretty much is coal powered. But he just like he takes these burning coals and chucks them out of the furnace, just straight up. That's how burning his rage is. He can't feel the scalding hotness of him.
Exactly, and then so the ship grinds to a halt. And then it's quite cold, so, you know, the ice starts settling in. And that's when he throws the anchor to really cement them down. So okay. At that point, they're frozen in, right?
And he did it on both ships.
Yes, sorry. Well, he had an inside man on the other ship who he signaled at night with, like, Morse code.
He bought up James Fitzjames because he seems by the name like the fella, you know?
Exactly. So now the boats are stopped. James, Mr. Double James, quite frankly, walks over on the ice, and they corner Franklin in the room and shank his ass. Not before making fun of him for being a bad leader in previous expeditions, though.
And it is completely ties into the story of, I'm crazy, how did this happen? Like, he just vanished today.
Exactly. And then, what he didn't know is here's where his fatal mistake occurred, right? The coal he threw out of the furnace is now no longer burning. And he doesn't know how to...
What a silly mistake.
Yeah, so it's not hot anymore, so he can't melt the ice. And he can't start the engine.
But he's there like, yo, there scientifically must be a way how to do this with magnets.
Yeah, exactly. He brings out his massive magnets he had in his pocket all along.
He's just like, why do you have this massive magnet in this pocket? To balance the other magnet. It
And okay, now it gets convoluted, but he puts the magnets in the engine, right?
Okay, this is physics now, people. Listen up.
And then he puts the coal back in there. And that's when the magnets decide, whoa, it's enough of being apart. This, for some reason, we stayed apart, but now it's over. So they, like, come together, and all the coal gets pulverized.
And imagine how big the magnets were. Basically, like, these fucking humongous, like, metal plates. It's just somebody just brings it out of his pocket, and everybody's there like, what the fuck? He's like, oh, yeah, I just had these and the whole time.
It folds up to become real small when it's in my pocket.
Oh, yeah, anymore. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
And so all the coal gets pulverized, and the entire crew was down there, and they closed the doors because this was highly secret, and they were scared that outside forces like fucking Davy Jones were probably trying to look in on the processes.
And Davy Jones has a compass who is magnetically not inclined.
There you go. So coal gets pulverized, everybody dies of asphyxiation. And Davy Jones now has a hint to where people are dead with his compass. So.
And all he found was dead people and a bunch of magnets. At least he got toys, huh?
Yeah, there you go.
Because it's like, you know that infamous joke of fire, air, earth and water, but magnets, how do they fucking work? Yeah. That could have been it. You know what? I like the magnet bit. I really do like the magnet bit. And I think that I know exactly how it happened now that I know how physics work, right?
Really, yeah.
So he was playing the magnets, which is just bowling around. And it was always, they were always angled in a way that they always attracted each other, right? Because, you know, like if you would change the angle, they basically repulse each other.
Yeah.
And what he was doing, he was basically playing catch with himself. So he was like throwing in there, and the magnet was so strong it came right back into his hand. It's so fun. It's just like, yay, catch, yay, catch. And suddenly he throws it on the other side of the other ship. But the magnet tries to pull itself towards the magnet, but it gets caught in the other ship. And the magnet is like strong magnet.
Quite.
So he just pulls both ships together, crash them into each other, and they sink.
You're just playing with your stupid magnets next to you. Yay!
At least he caught them, eh?
Yeah, I mean, he got his magnets back, presumably.
True. You know what else could have happened?
Well.
Now picture this. We talked about in the last episode about icebergs, right? So they're stuck in ice. Both ships.
Yeah.
But with time, they kind of start, you know, swiveling the ship around a bit, moving here about and there, trying to wiggle it out. And it works. Kind of. There is stretches of open water now. Not fully, but there are. And Crozier, being the smart guy of the two, is like, Sir, John, Franklin, fellow, comrade, we shouldn't do this because icebergs are dangerous, frankly. Franklin. They're rather dangerous. We shouldn't do this. Franklin goes, Listen, I have my boys, the fur traders, waiting for me on a deal just around the corner. I have to be there by Monday. I don't fucking care. Let's go. First ship going with Franklin. In the, they're kind of like in the scenario of one behind the other, right? Suddenly, angry manatees try to hold the ship, but it's a steam engine.
Yes.
Like, so presumably there's already metal involved and whatnot. No, actually, probably wouldn't. Actually, wouldn't it? I think we jumped the gun. It's not steam engines yet, Henry.
I think it was.
19th century steam engines already?
Yes.
Isn't it a bit too early for this?
No, I think that's correct.
Okay.
I mean, you have to... I'm pretty sure this... Let me do a quick background check, because now I'm curious. Steam engine...
Fact-checking ourselves halfway through the second episode.
Shut up. Steam... I mean, okay, they were invented in 1690...
So ah, I think, okay, then, yeah, by this point, definitely.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure this is also when, like, railroads really started being built.
Okay, so they're chucking along, everything's happening. And these manatees, they can't get this boat down to sink, because, I mean, it's iron. It's an iron lung, basically, right?
Right.
So, they decide to do it the other way around. They get on ice, in distance, which they're going to sail past.
Yeah.
And start to... nibble on the bits of ice. They start to literally just chew ice off. And Crozier and Franklin are like... Crozier is kind of wary. He's like, yeah, I'm kind of... There's some messing about. Something's going to happen.
Yeah.
He doesn't know what. Franklin, on the other way, is like, oh, look at these idiots. Stupid fucks. Stupid oxes who became manatees later. Like, look at them. Ha ha ha. What manatees were doing, for those who know anything about icebergs, is icebergs are actually, mass-wise, way more, how do I say this? They have way more mass underwater than they have over water, right?
Yeah.
And if the mass distribution is wrongly distributed, they just flip, which is why they're so dangerous. And these manatees, you would think... But that's besides the point, because the manatees are grizzling on top of the iceberg, so that means they're just reducing the amount that's on over water, so... But you don't know that they've been grizzling the right shape underwater this whole time. It's like a huge boot, like a whole leg in a boot. And they're just trying to get the weight distribution proper now. So what they're doing is... Because they're basically angling and... it's like a spring mechanism, but underwater, 100 manatees are holding this iceberg from flipping. And the manatees on top are getting the distribution right. And the ship is sailing past, and suddenly, out of nowhere, a huge boot just basically kicks it like a football, and the ship just launches off the air and just flies into the sky with this, like, And that's how the and that's why they never found the wreckage, because it was frankly just never there.
I feel like that's one of the most creative stories.
They found the wreckage like halfway across the Hawaii.
Well, Rudy, shall we go to the first hint then?
Sure. So apparently this is what happened. Apparently, we know that here we only do facts, and I feel like some of our stories might have like. whatever I'm going to read to you now, don't take it, historians, as, you know, factual people. Anyways, in the early stages of this ill-fated expedition, Crozier was promoted to captain on HMS Terror. Do you know why, Henry?
Because Franklin died?
Exactly. Our boy, previous commander, John Franklin, croaked in June 1847.
We did
presumably
it.
Of famine or scurvy.
Hell yeah, brother. We did it. We got his ass. He got his revenge.
I like the part of this where it says in early stages of the ill-fated expedition. He didn't even, like, see then, so to speak, where they got lost or something.
Yeah.
My guy was dead long by the point that...
That's also why I cut off, like, my story in my episode quite early. Because,
I understood.
Can't say too much more.
That's why I also cut mine. Like, this is already part of the resolution.
Yeah, I mean, it's good.
I mean, okay, this doesn't actually give me much of a prompt, so I think I'm going to do the next one already.
Yeah.
In 1859, so basically more than a decade after this expedition, because there were a lot of expeditions left to, like, sent to look for them, a note written by Crozier and James Fitzjames frankly said, "Goodbye, Johnny," and just threw him overboard. No.
Your time has come, buddy.
Yeah, and it was discovered on, those who have opened their maps, on King William Island during an expedition led by Francis McClintock.
Okay.
Dated 25th of April, 1848, so 3 years after Franklin expedition set sail. It indicated that the ships stuck in thick ice had been abandoned. 9 officers, including Sir John Franklin, and 15 crewmen had died by that point. Also stated was their intention to set out on foot towards the Back's Great Fish River on the Canadian mainland. So at this point, they had mained it to an island, King William's Island, and they were planning to go to Back's Great Fish River. And out of the more than 100 people on the expedition, sort of, what was it, 24 were dead, Sir John Franklin including.
Okay. All right. So what happened? Francis was obsessed with titles, right? Mate, fellow.
Oh, like that. Yeah, okay.
He wanted more. He wanted to be more friends.
It's a kink.
Across the globe. And what did you say? Great Fish?
Back's Great Fish River.
He confused that for Great Friend River.
He thought Back was a friend he could get.
Exactly. Back's Great Friend. So, in an emergency, they're stuck. Francis has croaked. He's like, okay, we go to get the great friend back. So, well, they walk, they travel. They're exhausted.
Because he wants to get his friends back, you know?
Exactly. He wants a necromancer, I guess. But
No, not like that. It's like, I got your back, you know? That
oh, like deal. That. Sure. How about both? So he walks over there, you know, the gang, they get going. They arrive. Where's the friends? There's just a fish here, dude. And it's a pretty fucking big one at that as well. And it turned out the fish god of the river, the great fish.
Named Back.
Hit them with a riddle. And it's, turn back or I will eat you.
What?
And this is very
nuanced.
I
thought you were going to give me an actual riddle, which I was like, can I guess? And then fucking turn around or I'll eat you. What a riddle. It's more of a demand.
Well, okay. Let me rephrase the riddle. Those who do not turn back will have a surprise waiting for them. And it's my fucking mouth and stomach, bitch.
So that's not a riddle. You already gave the answer. Give a riddle to which this would be an answer.
Okay. I mean, it's still... Okay. Those who do not turn back will find themselves with a surprise. Whack. How about that?
Sure.
I don't know. I can't really come up with a better riddle off the top of my head.
Let me help you with that, shall I?
Sure.
The great fish god opened his mouth. How would a fish even speak? I always assume they make these sounds.
Oh, whoa.
He opens his mouth, is like, ah, and the crows are standing there like, ¿qué pasa? Not understand. No Pablo, Española. And then the fish god goes, ah, oh, sorry. I just haven't seen people in a while. English, right? So, right, lads, here's the thing. I can get you a title. What do you want? I see you already have a fellow, a chap, a comrade, whatever. I'm going to give you a... How about a bloke? Can give you the title of a bloke. He's like, let's go. I'm going to add one medal to my... my how do they call those belts that you... like the scout thingies, you know?
Where
you?
Sash?
Yes. Here's the riddle. I am born in the water, but I do not swim. I have a mouth, but I do not eat. I have a bed, but I never sleep. What am I?
I have a mouth, but I do not eat?
Yes.
I have a bed, but I do not sleep?
Yes.
What was the other one?
I am born in the water, but I do not swim.
I'm a starfish.
What the...
I don't know. They probably have a rockin' ass bed, though.
I guess.
But they don't sleep.
Listen again carefully. It's a riddle by a fish god of the river. I am born in the water, but I do not swim. I have a mouth, but I do not eat. I have a bed, but I never sleep. What am I?
An anemone. I don't know, dude.
Listen carefully. It's a fish in the river. I am born in the water, but I do not swim. I have a mouth, but I do not eat. I have a bed, but I never sleep. What am I?
A fish in the river. I don't know. Why don't you just tell me the answer,
It's a fish in a river. I am born in the water, but I do not swim. I have a mouth, but I do not
eat. Oh, I see now.
I have a bed, but I never sleep. What am I?
It's the sea.
I like this bit. This is Crozier guessing this, right? And the fish right. Just looks at him like, listen, idiot, you standing in a river. I am born in the water, but I do not swim. I have a mouth, but I do not eat. I have a fucking bed too, but I never sleep. What fucking am I?
You're a really nice dude, is what you are. If you would give me this title.
Who is sitting in a river? I am born in the water, but I do not swim. I have a mouth, but I do not eat. I have a bed, but I never sleep. What the fuck am I? Please end me.
Do you have trouble with bed bugs with this bed if you don't sleep in it?
Do you fish by any chance?
I do.
Because somebody could just cook me up right now because I do want to die.
This takes a different turn than I was expecting.
So anyways, I'm bored with the bit. Henry, what's the answer?
A river.
Exactly.
Although I will say born in the water for a river... I feel like...
It is born in the water.
I mean, not really.
How is it not born in the water?
How is it born in the water?
It can start from a lake, from a sea, from a glacier that's melting, which is all water where it starts.
It's born because of water, but not in water.
I disagree.
I disagree with you.
Actually, we're both right.
Okay, I'll take that, because I win in this case. And you win as well, but that makes me happier, you know. But mostly because I won.
Me winning, okay, thank you.
No,
I'll take that.
I won.
No, I'll take it. Thank you very much. You're so nice today.
Thank you.
There you go. You see? You see, people? This is on record. We were the better people. The better people in this scenario right now.
Let's go on, Rudy. What else is there?
It was your bit about the fish.
Well... they died.
He just died there because he never guessed the actual answer. He just stood there and the fish was with him locked his whole life because the fish was like, I mean, it's an obvious answer, but he like is magically locked and he can't say the answer just straight up, right? And Crozier just never got it because he was, you know, good on magnetism, but fucking riddles? Nah.
Not a strength. He was like, yeah, it's instead of this riddle, what if I like do a magnet trick, dude? Will you give me then the title?
Yeah. That's exactly how it is. All right. How the cookie crumbled.
Let's continue.
Right. Well, I think it's actually time to do just the last bit of resolution, I feel like.
Okay, let's do it.
Unverified Inuit reports collected between 1852 and 1858 indicate that Crozier and the rest might have been seen in the Baker Lake area, about 400 kilometers to the south, where in 1948, Farley Mowat found a very ancient cairn, not of normal Eskimo construction, inside which were fragments of hardwood box with dovetail joints. McClintock and later searchers found relics, graves, and human remains of the Franklin crew on Beachy Island, King William Island, and the northern coast of the Canadian mainland. So honestly, for our last proper episode, I think it's a happy ending. I think they survived. Honestly, by the looks of it, I'm not even trying to make this up. They survived and made a house.
Well, there you go.
Or a cairn or whatever. They maybe haven't, you know, the modern life. But maybe countryside, not that bad, you know.
You gotta work with the tools you're given.
Exactly. It's one of those things, so maybe life pushes you down, but then you find peace and tranquility in whatever surroundings you find yourself in.
Yeah.
So I'd like to think, oh boy, Francis Crozier met his happily ever after without our Sir James Franklin. However, it is infamously known, which I don't know why. Why is it known as the Franklin Expedition? If Crozier and his company lived for far longer than this.
Because he was the captain of the expedition?
I thought he was the captain only on one of the ships.
He was the captain of the expedition, and he also had the main ship.
It's the same as the fucking Ross bloke.
I mean,
was gonna take credit for every rock he sees on the way.
I mean, you have like the main ship, and the main expedition is Franklin's expedition. Mm. And then the supporting boat. Hell, you won't see it called James Fitzjames's expedition.
Fitzjames's expedition would be a thing. It's only the surname, right?
Well, yeah, but I think for James Fitzjames, you have to mention the James in front as well.
Maybe. Well, anyhow, as it may be.
I want to say quickly.
Yes.
Imagine you're a time traveler. You really want to fuck with people. You just travel back to times like this, dress up like an Inuit, and say, oh yeah, bro, I think I saw them here, and they were like, I don't know, dude, they were eating each other. Cheers, dude. That back to the mainland. Yeah,
cheers, bro. Cheers. I like that, you know, the person is like a complete stoner from like the 20th century, and leaving later. Cheers, bro. Yeah, they're over the hill, right there. You want a blunt? Pretty good. Old Toby's.
Well, Rudy, thank you for listening.
Are you ready for your last ever plugin?
Yes.
Are you getting emotional?
No.
You should have. This right here means that he never cared about his podcast, people.
Facts on God. All right. So, thank you everybody for listening. If you want to send us a message, although, you know what? Fuck it. Don't bother. Send us a message at thevagabonddilemma@gmail.com. Actually, no, do bother. You can send me how good I am.
Do send him, he needs it.
TheVagabondDilemma@gmail.com. So it's just name of the show at gmail.com. Or if you want to go personal, Rudy has an Instagram.
@beloved. It's full of sweaty lashes. Curvy head, brown eyed Italians. Yuck. I've been waiting. But they never came. And you know what? Spirit of good things ending. It's fine. I've moved on. And
have you?
Frankly, if love comes my way barreling to knock me off my feet, I'll let it be knocked, you know? So 000, RUDYS 000 on Instagram for some private feedback. And just a quick disclaimer, we hope to, well, not see you, but that you hear us in our next and last episode of the one and only Vagabond Dilemma.
All right.
Where we go over our adventures, our times together, and just have a bit of a laugh.
Yay! All right, well, bye everyone.
Goodbye.